Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Women's Soccer Zone. Delighted to have you with us, and especially at a time where we are recording on the very day of International Women's Day, a very special event to recognise the inspiring women from all over the world. And we certainly have our fair share of those on this episode. Now, unfortunately, my good friend JJ Duke is unavailable, but you won't just hear me talking on my own throughout this show. As it's International Women's Day, it's only right that I have an all-female cast to support me. So first off, we're going to have a chat about the She Believes Cup, and I'm joined by Joe Curry from the BBC, who is currently out in the States covering the England team and their performances thus far in the tournament. And I'll also be joined by Jasmina Schweimler, who is my new German correspondent based out in Wolfsburg, big Wolfsburg fan, but she'll be giving us a German perspective on how the national team has been getting on at the She Believes Cup. And then I'm joined by what I would describe as a few inspiring women who are in the game. Kelly Simmons, the Director of Participation and Development at the English FA, had a chat with me about a scheme that was run last year for the first time, FA Girls Football Week. They are going to repeat that this year, but this time round there are going to be two events, the first one coming up in April. And then I'm joined by two players from Arsenal Ladies, two individuals very much at different ends of their careers, but no less influential on their club. Jordan Nobbs, who I joined during a media day at Arsenal Ladies training ground as they unveiled a dedicated hub for the women's team that saw brand new changing rooms and physio room dedicated to the women's team. And I also had a chat with Kelly Smith. There were doubts as to whether she was going to be continuing on her playing career, but recently signed a new contract and spent an interesting few hours out in Zurich, where she met the new FIFA president Gianni Infantino during his impromptu kickabout that he arranged at short notice after his election. So I'm going to have our chat with Jordan and, of course, the two Kellys individually. So without further ado, let's crack on and talk about the She Believes Cup. And after the break, I will be joined by Joe Curry.
Women's Soccer Zone. Follow the show on Twitter at WOSOZone.
As mentioned in our introduction, I'm delighted to be joined by Joe Curry of the BBC to discuss the England team at the She Believes Cup. Should stress these are Joe's views, not those necessarily of the BBC. Joe, how are you doing?
Very good, thank you. It's sunny in Florida, so it's a good place to be at the moment.
The exact reason why I rejected your video call and called you back on an audio call on Skype, because I did not want to see that sunshine or that swimming pool that you are no doubt talking
about. See the pool.
No, I don't want to see that. I don't want to see that when I'm stuck in my London flat. But look, you've been out there since the start of the She Believes Cup. You've been closer than anyone to the England team. You've seen the first two games. They've got no points, but they've been at least competitive, haven't they? What's been your views of England so far, and what's the mood in the camp going into that final game against France?
Yeah, well, the two words that keep being sort of banded around the England camp at the moment are unlucky and positive. I think they felt a bit unlucky against the USA. They only lost by a goal, which on paper isn't actually a terrible result for England, and it was an absolute blinder of a goal, wasn't it? It was a wonder goal by Crystal Dunn. And I think they felt that they were so close to getting something from that game. And then against Germany, the own goal that Gilly Flatty scored, there was nothing they could do about that. You know, they described that as unlucky. Then to concede a penalty that probably wasn't a penalty just 4 minutes later, I think they felt pretty hard done by. But as I say, they're positive, and that's all they keep talking about. They know that they've competed in these games. They're playing teams that have won World Cups, have won European Championships, have won Olympic Games. They're the top three ranked teams in the world. And yeah, England are fifth, so they're not far behind, but they know they're playing teams that are just that slight level above them, and they know that they've given these teams a real run for their money. I think when Germany and USA came off the pitches, they knew they'd been in a game against England, and that's the positiveness that England are talking about.
I went on another podcast earlier today, and I said that it wasn't necessarily overly important that England win the games out at the She Believes Cup. I know that Mark Sampson said before he went out that they were going out there to win every game and to win the whole competition. But the important thing from my perspective was that England had to go out there and be able to compete. And we've seen in the past, not necessarily recently, in the past where they have been massively overrun by the likes of Germany and USA, and they have given as good as they've got. Is that kind of the mood that the England players are feeling at the moment? Have they adjusted? They obviously can't win the whole tournament now, but do you think, regardless of the result against France, they can go back home and look at this competition as a positive?
The players can certainly, even if they lost this final game and went home with three defeats, they can go home and hold their heads up high. But if I'm honest, I think they would be disappointed to go home without a win. I think even a draw against France wouldn't be good enough for them. They know that they could have beaten the USA. They know they could have beaten Germany. And I think if they lose against France, they'll say that it's, you know, it's positive, we'll learn lots of lessons. And I believe them. They will learn a lot from this tournament. And luckily the Euros, which is their next big tournament, because they're not in the Olympics, is over a year away. But personally, I think if they don't get on that plane with at least 3 points, then the individual, you know, the players will be disappointed. But I think, as you say, you know, they've competed against each team. So they haven't done, they've done themselves justice. They've done themselves no harm whatsoever. But I think particularly in the UK, there was such a big boost for women's football when they won bronze at the World Cup that they want to continue that momentum and continue to build interest. So for them, a win against France would be a big deal.
Yeah, do you, I mean, on the flip side, you're absolutely right in saying that they won bronze at the World Cup last year and there was a lot of interest off the back of that. Do you think, therefore, that if they come away with 0 points, there could be a reverse effect where people look at it as not having a good competition, therefore they might lose a little bit of interest, or they might not be able to build the momentum off of a successful tournament like they did at the World Cup last year?
I think the fact they've competed against the USA and Germany and gone head-to-head with them and only lost by a goals difference in both games will do them a lot of credit. I think if, you know, if they'd won the tournament, that would have helped increase the interest back home no end. You know, if we'd got even just one win and that was against the USA, that would have done wonders as well for what people think about the England women's team. I don't think it'll do a huge amount of damage. It's not one of the three major tournaments. It's not the Olympics, the World Cup, the Euros. But for themselves, they will want to go home with something. I think the fans will be proud of them no matter what. But I think if they get on that plane with a win against France, everyone will be a lot happier.
It's the first She Believes Cup. What have you made of it? What's been the reaction, the support like in the United States? You've obviously started off in Tampa, went out to Nashville. You're now back in Florida, in Boca Raton. What have you made of the competition? Well supported, well followed?
Well, the two matches, the first one in Tampa got 13,000, which was a record for Tampa. And the crowd at Nashville was fantastic. Over 25,000 people in that huge stadium. So the crowd support's been very good. But what's been interesting, just being in the local areas, being in Tampa and being in Nashville, is that not even the locals always know what's going on. A lot of people aren't even aware that this tournament is on their doorstep, that the US World Cup winning national football team or soccer team is playing on their doorstep. And looking at some of the local newspapers, it doesn't even get a mention in some of them. So it's a bit of a strange one because you're getting these big crowds. But actually, I don't know how much of a ripple it's really making over here.
And what have you made of the furore that is the US fans and the US media? I went and covered them for the World Cup for a short period of time in Canada last year. Absolutely crazy, like nothing I've seen before. Have you seen the same?
I have not had any dealings with the US press or the US fans or the US team that much in the past. And I have to say, the fans in particular are nuts, but in a really good way. I mean, the singing, the clapping, the chanting, and which I actually quite liked also is the booing and the jeering when they don't get decisions go their way by the referee. They properly boo and jeer, which is quite funny, but that's a sign of a real sports crowd. So, yeah, I've absolutely loved the atmosphere. And just because in the WSL, which is what I cover a lot in England, the most you're going to get in a crowd there, I think towards the end of the season, Man City in the final game of the season got just about 3,000, whereas most games are getting between 1, perhaps 2,000 for the bigger games. So to come out here and see a women's football game in front of 25 screaming, crazy, nutty fans, it's been absolutely brilliant.
So I guess I'd wrap it up by asking, make a prediction, how are England going to get on against France, and who do you see winning that decider between Germany and the USA?
Nothing like putting me on the spot, Kieran. I've got to go with an England win. I think that they, well, it's difficult because France are obviously in the same position. They've lost their opening two games as well, and neither of these teams want to go home with a wooden spoon. I've got to stick with my team. No, I'm going to say England. We don't score a lot of goals, so I'll go for a 1-0. As for the USA and Germany, that's going to be a really, really big game. And I'm going to, simply because of they're the home nation, they'll have the home support, I'm going to say that the USA are going to scrape it. I don't think there'll be much in it. I'll say 2-1 to the USA.
Will be an interesting one. I'm sure that many listening to this will be watching. Joe, really appreciate your time. When we come back after this short break, I will introduce to you a German perspective on the She Believes Cup as we speak to Jasmina Schweimler, making her debut on the show. Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, Kieran.
Women's Soccer Zone. It's all about the players.
Okay, so you've heard the views of Joe Curry of the BBC, who is currently covering England out in the She Believes Cup. And now I am joined by my good friend Jasmina Schweimler out in Germany, making her debut on Women's Soccer Zone to give us a German perspective. Jasmina, hello, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
It will be a pleasure moving forward because you're going to be giving us some regular insight into what's going on in Germany, talking to us about the German women's national team and, of course, the Frauen Bundesliga as well. Now, you've been watching the She Believes Cup. We've heard from Joe Curry, as we said, giving the English perspective. What's been your views of how Germany have performed? They've played two games. They've won two games. They have a final coming up against the United States. What have you made of Germany so far?
I'm actually very surprised how they played so far, because obviously it's not the same team that competed at the World Cup. It's a whole different team with new players, with a lot of players missing. But they actually play a very defensive game lately, which is very unusual. The German women's national team usually plays very forward, and they usually want to score as many goals as possible. But what I have noticed in the game against France was that they let France have possession in their own half, which is, you know, not very usual. And we didn't have many chances because of that.
Why do you think that is? Obviously, Germany are having to replace a few players. The likes of Celia Sasic have retired, Nadine Angerer have retired. Do you think that that Sylvia Knight is using this competition to try some new things, try new players, try new formations? Or do you think this is a natural thing because of the players that she's lost?
No, I mean, Sylvia Knight said that she wants to try out new things at the She Believes Cup, which I totally understand. It's a great opportunity for the young girls, especially, to compete on a high level and test against great opponents. So that was probably it.
What have you made of the players that she's brought in? I think Isabel Kaszowski is one player that's impressed me. I think Jennifer Marajan's been relatively quiet. I thought Leonie Meyer in the first game, I thought, had a good performance, but didn't play much in the second game. But who of the players that have stood out for you and why?
I know Isabel Kaszowski from Wolfsburg, obviously, so I know what she is capable of. And I was very, very impressed by her in the first game against France. She had a great run 4 minutes into the game already, and I saw people on Twitter already saying stuff like, wow, she's really fast. But yeah, she is. She's great on the wings. Unfortunately, she doesn't play much in Wolfsburg. She's only a substitution, but I think if she continues to play like that, then she's going to be a part of the women's national team in future. So she was one of the players that really stood out for me. But also Sarah Dorsun from Essen. She made her first game for the women's national team against France, and she did incredibly well.
In what sense was she great? Why was she great?
I can only imagine what it's like to play your first game, and then it's at the She Believes Cup in the USA against an opponent like France, who are known to be very strong. Lacking shape lately, but still they are very strong. And she was, you know, she was not nervous. She didn't seem like she played her first game. It was like she was a part of the team for a while already, and that really impressed me.
What was the reaction of German supporters after the England game? Because it would be fair to say they were a little bit fortunate with the penalty that they got and the own goal that England scored. And up to that point, Germany didn't really look like scoring. Were people quite negative towards the team after that performance, or are they just pleased that they're through to the final?
I thought our win against England was a bit lucky, if not very lucky. But I also had reaction on Twitter, and people told me that maybe I'm too negative because I tweeted about it. And I have said that the first goal was a present, obviously. It was an unfortunate own goal. And the second one, it wasn't a penalty. But of course, you know, the German fans were happy that we won the game and that we took that penalty. People just didn't like how we got this one. Because I think Alex Pop, she hurt herself. It wasn't a penalty at all. So, yeah, I had different reactions. I didn't feel like Germany really fought to win that game because we didn't have many chances. And England dominated the first half, which we tried to fight against it, but it was really tough. So, yeah, it was a lucky win, but very unfortunate for the England team. I think they deserved more.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And how do you feel the German team's chances are against the United States when they play each other in the final game of the competition?
That's going to be tough. But I think I would like to see more actions on the wings. So we have maybe Kaschowski and Blesse again, because Sarah Debritz will not play against the USA. She collected her second yellow card against England. And then as forward, maybe Alex Pop, because we all know that she's really dangerous when she gets crosses into the penalty area. I think we could manage that if we tried to attack over the wings and with many crosses, maybe. But it's going to be tough because, yeah, Alex Morgan scored a last-minute goal against
France.
Yeah, exactly. So everything is possible. I don't know.
And what about, they're going to have to be very strong defensively, aren't they, when you look at how well Mallory Pugh has played for the United States in particular?
We have to improve that a lot. The coordination in the game against England wasn't that great, and that caused the first goal by Tony Duggan, it was, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Josephine Henning, I think it was Josephine Henning, she didn't watch her that well, and we have to prevent that.
Well, I'm sure it will be a fascinating final, and I'm sure you will be watching. We will get you on the next show to give us a little bit of a summary of the tournament, and we will have a chat as well about what's going on in the Frauen Bundesliga as well. Jasmina, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
Women's Soccer Zone would like to thank our partners, She Kicks Magazine. Subscribe at shekicks.net for even more women's football.
So as we celebrate International Women's Day, it is of course about inspiring women, but it is also about inspiring the younger generation, the young women, the young girls looking to make those choices, looking to be educated in certain areas. And one of the ways that the English FA are looking to do that is by encouraging more girls to participate in football. And one of the ways that they are doing that is by organising an FA Girls Football Week, something that they ran in October last year for the very first time, that had 16,000 participants over the course of a week, which was a lot more than they were expecting. They are now going to run two events this year, one in April and one in October. And I managed to catch up with Kelly Simmons, the Director of Participation and Development at the FA, to talk about the upcoming event in April, what it was about and how people can get involved. So here she is. So Kelly Simmons from the FA joins me on this episode of Women's Soccer Zone to talk about FA Girls Football Week. No better day to talk about an event that promotes participation in football as we're recording this on International Women's Day. Kelly, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, no problem. So
it was announced by the FA recently off the back of last year's FA Girls Football Week that you are going to do two events this year, the first one being, well, it's coming up soon, the week beginning April the 25th. What's the thinking behind doing 2 weeks after only 1 year of having the 1 week?
Well, two different audiences really. So the one that's coming up is targeting schools, primary and secondary schools particularly, and that age group, and supporting teachers or coaches with resources and marketing materials, encouraging them interviews a week to get girls into football. And then later in the year, it's very much about further education, higher education. We know that's a key transition time, 16, when girls and boys in sport generally can drop out. So our partnerships with further education, higher education are really important, and also, you know, a great opportunity to work in those settings and get young women to play football. So we'll be partnering with the FE and the HE sector to encourage them really to run the week and see if we can get more girls or young women playing in those settings.
Do you see that as a key area? It's often talked about, the dropout rate of young girls and young women when they get to their sort of mid-teenage years and they start to be introduced to things that maybe fall outside sport. Is this event and this week designed to try and encourage them that there are opportunities for them and that, you know, it is a fun sport that they should look to carry on in?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's easier sometimes to target within institutions where young people are. You know, it's harder work sometimes to put events on in communities and market in those communities and get girls or young women there. So it's easier to go into schools or into colleges, into universities where you've got that kind of captured market and attention. You've got those partners. We've got big partnerships already with the FE and HE sector around football generally. This will be another initiative that we're working with them on to just use the profile really of the girls football week to get more girls, young women playing.
And we mentioned at the start of the interview, off of the back of a really, really successful first year last year in October, you ran an FA Girls Week Football Week. You had over 16,000 women and girls participate, which was
fantastic. They had a great response.
Well above the estimated number that you had anticipated, and you're looking for even more. I've read that the week in April you're looking for over 17,000. How have you calculated the number that you're looking to get?
Well, the development team who are leading on this have gone for a 20% increase, so just keep trying to push really with the increasing profile and coverage that the game is enjoying to keep building on that and push ourselves really to work with our partners out there and the schools to get behind it even more and get more girls going. So we just, you know, set ourselves, despite a fabulously successful massive growth last year, we've set ourselves a target to get to 20% increase this year. But the most important thing is that we just keep encouraging schools to provide football for girls, provide regular football for girls. If they don't run girls football, to use this week to do so and, you know, to break away from maybe some of the traditional offers of, you know, netball, rounders, etc., that girls have traditionally kind of been offered, and say, look, football is a global, hugely global game. It's a massive growth area. We know girls want to play it from our research. You know, here's session plans, here's resources, here's everything for you on the FA Girls Football Week website.
And what,
give it a go. The girls will have a great time.
And what sort of things will those resources contain? You mentioned lots of materials, lots of things that are going to be provided to the schools. What do they actually contain? What will they be delivering?
So just fun session plans, really. It's just trying to make it as easy as possible that if you're a teacher, we know you'll be really, really busy. You may or you may not already play football or be a coach. So you just download session plans, lots of fun games and activities that you can run with the girls. You don't have to do too much planning. We've done it for you. Just take the session plans off, print off the flyers or the posters to put around the schools and promote your event and encourage girls to go. So we've tried to take every barrier away to make it as easy as possible for schools to get involved and run those sessions.
And final question, what's the best way for young girls to find out about FA Girls Football Week, and how about the schools and those that are interested in running sessions?
So it's the www.fagirlsfootballweek.com, also the County Football Association there. They'll have a lead for women and girls, and they're a great support for schools, clubs or community groups that want to start girls football.
Women's Soccer Zone, it's all about the players.
So that was Kelly Simmons. Of course, if you are interested in joining in with FA Girls Football Week, as she said, you can visit the website and there will be more details on there. Now, rather than carry on chatting myself, I'm going to take you into our next interview. And as mentioned in the introduction, I was fortunate enough to catch up with someone whose career I've followed for the last few years. I've sponsored her in the past and seen her grow into a really, really influential midfielder for both club and country. I was delighted to catch up with Jordan Nobbs at Arsenal Ladies training ground during a media day to chat about a new contract that she'd signed committing herself to the club, but also about the new facilities that are going to be available to her and her teammates. So without further ado, here's Jordan.
All right, delighted to be joined by Jordan Nobbs. Jordan, last week it was announced that you'd signed a new long-term contract with Arsenal. How much thinking did you have to do before you put pen to paper?
Naturally, I think as a player you always have to have a little think and know what you want to do as a player, but I think Arsenal from the age of 17 has always been in my heart, and I think the progression of me as a player has really improved over the last few years, and I think Pedro coming in as well, and his philosophy is really something that I love to play like and love to be a part of. So I think it was still an easy decision for me to stay at the club and still be wearing red.
Now, I tweeted in your direction when you'd signed the contract that when other players had left, you decided to kind of stick around, for want of a better term. Why is it particularly that you've decided to stay here, especially when there have probably been other opportunities to go elsewhere? You've seen former teammates like Steph Horton excel at Man City. Other players have gone to other big clubs as well. Why is it that you've not followed suit and decided to challenge yourself elsewhere?
I think as a player you can exceed any club, really, you know, if you put your mind to it and really believe in yourself. And I think other people had other opportunities, but I really believed that Arsenal was the place I wanted to be and the place I wanted to excel at. And I think I came through some tough times when I first joined the club and really pushed myself as a player that made me one of the best I can be. And I think I love a challenge, and when everyone left I believed in the club and I believed in what we could do as a team. And a turnaround is never easy, and it was hard for me as a player to make that decision, but I'm glad I've made it. And I think we've got a really strong side now that we've added to.
I was going to come on to that. There's no doubt that there will have been people who maybe questions Arsenal's ability to compete. We've seen Man City take a step up, Liverpool take a step up, Chelsea take a step up. You look at what Arsenal have done in the off-season, tying people like yourself down to a new contract. Kelly Smith signed a new contract this week. The players that I've just spoken to, Daniel van der Donk, quality international players. It kind of backs up the sort of decision that you've made, hasn't it, in terms of what this club is trying to do?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, naturally, when I was signing my contract, I had to know that this club was moving forward and we were going to be competing with the bigger teams now. But like you say, all the teams are moving forward and, investing a lot more money into it as well. So I think that was a big decision for me. But I really believe that, that's why I'm here and that's why I'm staying, to be playing alongside players like this and, really be a major part of winning this league this year. I really believe if we keep our team fit that, we will be unbeatable.
Yourself, Farrah Williams, Danielle we've mentioned, Leah Williamson, Vicky Lissard, lots of competition in that midfield now, Jordan.
Yeah, it's exciting, but as a player and wanting to be the best, you want to be playing with the best and you want to be playing against the best as well. So I think it's exciting for us, and it's always a good thing to have a bit of nerves in your belly. Am I going to start or am I not? And I think that's what makes you a better player. You want to be nervous and you want to be fighting for your place in training, and I think that's how some of the best teams in the world win trophies, because they have that team, that strength, that quality of changing the team around as well. But naturally as an Arsenal player I want to be playing every game this season, and I'm definitely going to be fighting for my position to be playing every single game and showing what I can do as a player.
You had an opportunity to spend a bit of time with the players, a bit of bonding away from the training ground in Spain, had two competitive friendlies against Wolfsburg and a good win against FC Bayern Munich as well. How beneficial was that? How important was that in terms of blending in the new players and allowing you all to spend a bit of time together?
Yeah, you need it as a team. I think you think you're training every day and you will bond, but I think sometimes time away and you know, literally you're waking up, you're there, you know, you're sleeping, you're there. So I think that makes it extra intense. But I think sometimes that intensity can make you a lot more comfortable around each other. You know, you then just bond better on the pitch. I think the more you can speak better off the pitch, and I think that's what we did in Spain, and I think that showed in our performances as well. You know, how well we performed as a team. You know, not just individuals. So I think that's the way forward for us. And you know, we can't get too ahead of ourselves from them games, but I think it's a good starting point, you know, beating a team like Bayern.
Is your role changing a little bit in the team in terms of seniority? I was just in the new changing room, and Faye White was explaining that the shirts are laid out in order of who's been at the club longest. Yours is barely near the front. It's quite high up. So based on that, still very young, but do you kind of almost see yourself now as one of the more senior players who has that a little bit more responsibility on their shoulders?
Yeah, it's a nice feeling, I think, to be that close in line for being here the longest. I think it's a privilege, you know. Everyone wants to be an Arsenal player, I think, as a kid, and to know that I've been here for maybe 6 years now, I think it's exciting. And I'd like to hope that I'm now taking that initiative and that leadership role as well to be a better player, and also, you know, bring up players like people did with me, you know, when I was here, like Jane Ludlow and players like that, Katie Chapman. You know, they obviously developed me as a youngster, and I'd like to hope that I'm starting to develop them attributes now to develop other players and still learn from, you know, the older players, being a young one myself.
You mentioned being here 6 years. How much has it changed in terms of, you've got quite a few media around here today, you've got a new facility that's being opened compared to 6 years ago? Could you ever imagine that this, you'd be sitting here in this environment?
No, I mean, you know, going from training twice a week to now having our own facility to train, play, eat every single day at is just unbelievable. And I think as a footballer, it's a dream come true, really, that we have the access to do this and live the life of a footballer. And it's just exciting. And I hope that it continues this way, and I hope we can continue to keep improving the women's game. And the only way by doing that is by things like this. You know, we want to train and be a proper elite athlete, and I think that's how Arsenal are looking at it as well, with the way we've got these facilities.
Thanks, Jordan.
Thank you.
Women's Soccer Zone. Listen to the show on Audioboom or download via iTunes. Just search for Women's Soccer Zone.
So that was Jordan Nobbs, exciting player who I have no doubt is going to go on to achieve great things for both club and country. Well, of course, I can't finish off a show without one of the most inspiring women that I know on a personal level, and the main reason that I got into women's football in the first place. She's just signed a new contract to play on for the next year, when there was a lot of question marks as to whether she might retire or not. So I had a chat with her, and about, as mentioned in the introduction, her meeting with new FIFA president Gianni Infantino, who invited her along to participate in a rather star-studded kickabout out in Zurich. So without further ado, here is Kelly Smith. So delighted to be joined by my good friend and fellow Watfordian, Kelly Smith, who's going to talk to me a little bit about a recent trip that she took out to Zurich to meet the new FIFA president, Gianni Infantino, and also a little bit about a new contract that she signed with Arsenal Ladies. Kels, how you doing?
I'm good, Kieran. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. So recently, you made a little trip out to Zurich to take part in a friendly football match with a load of legends that had been arranged by the new FIFA president, Gianni Infantino. Number one, how did that invite come about? And number two, how was it?
It was on a Monday, and I got a phone call on Saturday late morning for a FIFA contact saying that the new president wants to invite me out to play a friendly football game with FIFA staff and former and current professional players. And I think it was all kind of last minute, because it happened on the Saturday, and all the FIFA people were trying to get everybody into Zurich for that Monday morning. So they only had like real 2 days to plan it. But it was a great occasion. I feel quite honoured to have been asked to go out and represent women's football. I know it was probably a busy week because all the international players are away currently on, you know, Olympic duty, qualifications and friendlies. Obviously, with England being in America, Germany, France. So they kind of, I guess, were scraping at the barrel a little bit. Who's left, who's behind? So I was available to go. Pedro Martinez let me fly out. It's a great opportunity for me to meet him and pick his brain a little bit, and also a good representative, you know, for England and of Arsenal to let me attend. It was good fun. I met some great former world-class male players in Luis Figo, Andrei Shevchenko, Clarence Seedorf, Deco, to name a few, and it was just great to be there and celebrate the new president's first day in term.
Scraping the barrel with a player who's got over 100 caps for a country and is record goal scorer for a country as well. Yeah, you're absolutely right, Kels. He really did scrape the barrel. I saw that Julius Simic of Wolfsburg and Melanie Leupolz of Bayern Munich was also out there. Were there any other female players? I'm sure I saw in the photograph that there were a few more than just the three of you.
No, it's just us, Kira, and just the three of us. As I said, it was like, I know a few of the other players were asked, but it was just so busy with everyone being away on international duty, and it was so last minute that I know Birgit Prinz was asked, Sonia Van Pasta-Marta, but they just with their club commitments, and obviously being so last minute, they were tied into that. So it was very, very last minute, and us three obviously were there representing the women's side of the game. So it was good that we had three of us there, you know, to do that.
And as you said, playing alongside all those legends, you've already said it was a massive honour. Did you get to speak to the new president himself? Did you get to talk about women's football? Did he give you any insight into what his ideas might be?
It was very brief, but he come and said hello and, you know, said to us thanks for coming along and representing the female side of the game. And we just speaking to him, he has actually four daughters that all play handball. So for me, that was a bit of an indication that, you know, he's very wary of women's football and how his daughters are interested in sport. And we said to him that, you know, what are you going to do? How are you going to move the game forward? And he just smiled and said there's a lot to do to promote women's football. So, but he said that he's up for it, and it's a big challenge. But I think we will see considerable changes in the future. He is very for the women's game, so we'll just have to wait and see what comes of it, his new ideas.
I think I read or listened to another podcast. I think he's the ninth FIFA president in over 100 years. The average term for a FIFA president is 14 years. So, as you say, he has got a big job on his hand. I mean, your playing career, virtually the whole of your playing career, Sepp Blatter was FIFA president. We won't talk about what he did, or more in probably more bigger case, what he didn't do. But what, I mean, if you say, for example, you were given the role of president for the day, what's the first thing you'd probably focus on, given the opportunity?
Well, that's a massive question. I don't know. There's so much to do. Obviously, budgets are a big thing. Giving as much, you know, financial clout to the women's game. I think taking it as seriously as a men's World Cup, putting it on that same level, the same stadiums, just run it the same World Cup or whatever as a men's World Cup would be run. I think, you know, even a club World Cup, same as the men's side to do, just to integrate and showcase women's football at the highest level and club level, I think that needs to happen. And they're just two of the things that spring to my mind.
Well, you mentioned that you had that football match with a lot of legends. Who was on your team and how did the game go?
Who was on my team? There was a guy that I didn't actually know his name. He was proper old guy. He had a knee problem. But I was against Paolo Maldini the first game, and the second game I was against Shevchenko, Pires, Robert Pires was there, and Seedorf, Spanish defender that used to play for Bolton.
Oh, Fernando Hierro.
He was on my side. Yeah, tall guy. He just bossed it at the back. He was, even though he was a lot older, he could just tell the quality that he had, just chesting the ball down and bringing it down on the floor and playing long balls out the back. It was a good eye-opener just to see, even though these guys are retired and probably, you know, a good few years out of the game, just see that they've still got the physique and the technique and the skill and the vision. And they're still obviously top-level players, even though they've retired.
Well, we mentioned Arsenal, and of course you are assistant coach as well as a player to Pedro Losa at Arsenal Ladies. It was announced recently that you have extended your contract for another year. Now, I've spent most of the off-season badgering you, saying, what are you going to do? Are you going to carry on? Now, I remember at the FA Awards, you said to me, Kieran, what if I don't think I'm still at the standard that allows me to play in the FAWSL? What if I'm not able to perform in the way that I have done in the past? Now, what is it that's changed since then? Or what is it that's made you think, yeah, I can still perform and I can still take to that field and put in positive performances?
Well, I sat down with both Pedro, my agent, and Claire Wheatley, the general manager, and they stressed to me that they still wanted me to be a big part of the club, on-field and off-field duties. So it was kind of a no-brainer for me that, the deal that they put on the table for me and just feeling wanted by the club. And obviously, overcoming my injury, it was a slow rehab process coming back. And obviously, now my ankle's in a good, strong place. And I felt good. I felt good in pre-season. I was even training with the team without being under contract. My contract had kind of run out. So I felt really good. And felt like I was at the races again, and really enjoying being around the team and the banter that goes on a day-to-day basis. So for me, I thought, you know what, I love this club, I still want to play, I'm still able to play, my body still allows me to play, so I'm going to go for it for this year.
I don't want to delve too much into historical events, but we know what happened last year that kind of curtailed your season. Was there a little bit of that in your thinking as well, that you didn't want to kind of leave the game, you know, being remembered for being taken off the pitch of an injury, and actually you want to be not remembered, but you want to go out on a high note, maybe by winning a trophy with the club or having a really good season, or, you know, I don't know whether this will be your last year, only you know that, but having a good year and possibly winning some silverware as well.
Yeah, that was part of it. I didn't want, you know, that injury to be the end of my last game. I think I wanted to give it another go. Sorry, my dog's barking. I just wanted to give it another go and test myself. And so far in pre-season, I've been, you know, been doing well, getting some minutes under my belt, playing in these games, and, you know, I'm looking like the team is a lot stronger this year, the signings that we've made. Am I probably going to start most games? No. I know my role within the team has changed. I've accepted that through having conversations with Pedro. I still feel like I've got, you know, I can come on as a sub and an impact player and maybe change the game. It's about viewing the game from the bench and seeing certain areas where you feel like you can impact the game. So that's going to be probably my role moving forward this season, and I'm more than happy to do that and try and help the team, like you said, try and get that league title that we've been alluded of the last few years. Yes, we haven't been good enough, but I feel like this year, with obviously Farrell Williams coming in and solidifying the midfield and a few other signings that we've made in the Dutch international Daniela van der Donk, we've got some more attacking threat up top. And obviously we signed Josephine Henning, more stability at the back and cover there. So for me, I think we're in a far better position to challenge on all fronts this year. So I want to still be a part of that and help the team in any way I can.
Well, you mentioned a lot of new players there, and you're absolutely right. A lot more depth in that team. I know that the club suffered with horrendous injuries last year. At one point, you had pretty much your whole first-choice midfield unavailable. But I guess as well as those new signings, it's the players that you've been able to keep as well. It's well documented a few years ago that Arsenal had a lot of players leave for pastures new, but that hasn't happened more recently, has it? You look at Jordan Nobbs, who will also be on this edition of Women's Soccer Zone. She's signed a new long-term deal. Leah Williamson has signed a new contract. Rachel Yankee has just signed a new deal as well. I think Emma Byrne signed a new contract not too long ago. It's not just a case of getting those players in, but you're also keeping hold of that core of the team as well, aren't you?
Yeah, I think that's been important for Pedro and for Claire Wheatley, the general manager, that they realise, obviously, you want to tie the young players down, i.e. Dan Carter and Jordan Nobbs, because they are the future and Leah. You want to give them long-term deals and, you know, tell them that you believe in them and they are the future of the club, but you also want the older players there, just their experience, stability, and knowledge of the game, and helping the young players through. So I think the club's moving, like I said, in the right direction. We brought in some no one there who's going to play, which is a good thing, because every training session is very competitive, and the games are going to be creeping up soon, so it's all about, some players aren't going to be happy that not starting, but it's up to them to work hard and push themselves and get teammates in training to try and get in the starting 11. Whereas I think in the past, the last few years, you could probably pick the first 11, but this year I don't think, the first 11 is written in stone, and I think that's where Pedro's going to have a bit of a headache this year, in terms of, you're going to have international players on the bench. That are going to be not happy, but want to get in that starting 11. So it's
going to
be very competitive.
And this episode of Women's Soccer Zone is coming out on International Women's Day, which is March the 8th. We're recording this a few days beforehand, so I am actually allowed to talk about a media day that was held at the club last week, where media was shown around brand new facilities for the women's team. You've got your own little hub up in London Colney, where you've got your own changing room, you've got your own kind of chill out area, you've got your own physio and fitness room, which looked really impressive. The club is heading in the right direction, isn't it?
Yeah, I think, the big man, Ivan Gafidis, and management staff have met on a number of occasions the last, year or so, and realised that we've kind of been caught napping a little bit the last few years and been overtaken by Chelsea and Man City and not been as competitive in the league and on the cup front. So they've addressed that and realised, we needed to strengthen the squad and bring, a more professional approach to the game. And obviously building this new hub for us, where we have a base to call our home, is going to certainly help with the team cohesion and atmosphere of the team. And help us moving forward. Obviously, the signings that we've had too, we've got a full-time assistant coaching and a full-time exercise scientist, strength and conditioning coach. So it just shows we are, like you said, we are moving in the right direction and putting things in place in order for us to fight on all fronts again.
Well, the season's only a couple of weeks away, so very exciting times. I'm going to wrap it up, Kel. Final question. Last year, Women's World Cup, you were part of the Fox Sports broadcast team, went down very well from people that I've spoken to in the States. Actually managed to see a little bit myself when I spent a bit of time in the US during the World Cup. You're carrying on for another year playing. You've got your assistant coach role with Pedro at Arsenal. How are you fitting everything in, and is broadcasting something you'd like to do a little bit more of this year? Will we see you broadcasting in Rio, perhaps?
Good question. No, obviously, it's a very busy time right now. I'm not solely focusing on this year, on playing. That's what I and my staff want. So the coaching role has taken a bit of a back seat this year. But I'm still obviously, looking to do my A licence and pick up the coaching hours, at some point. But for me, it's more focused on keeping myself healthy and fit and trying to help the team. Obviously, I like doing the broadcasting work. The experience that I had in Canada working for Fox Sports was phenomenal, watching all 62 games and breaking them down and analysing the games. It's something that I really, really enjoyed. Something that I want to do in the future. I'd love to be still involved. I've done a few of the England Euro qualifier games. So it's something that I'm open to and looking to pursue, and obviously keep my coaching career going when I do finish playing. Well, I'm pretty busy at the moment.
Women's Soccer Zone. Follow the show on Twitter at WOSO Zone.
So that was Kelly Smith, absolute legend in my eyes. Delighted that she's continuing on for another year. And that wraps up another Women's Soccer Zone. Now, I apologise. There are a number of subjects that I would love to have covered in this show. None more so than the Asian Olympic qualifying. Big congratulations to both Australia and China for qualifying for Rio. Unbelievable achievements, and a real shock that Japan will not be going to Rio after some pretty below par performances that see them eliminated from the competition. But I will get Anne O'Dong, our friend from the women's game, on the next show to talk about that. I have no doubt that she and her team are incredibly excited about the prospect of heading down to Rio. And of course, the UEFA Olympic qualifying mini tournament that's taking place between Switzerland, the Netherlands, Sweden and Norway. That's yet to be completed on the day of recording, so I can assure you we will cover that in the next show. But thank you for tuning in. As always, if you want to contact us, you can do. We are on Twitter on @WosoZone. If you wish to email us, you can do. We're on wosozone@gmail.com. And of course, there are two ways to listen to the show. Firstly, through iTunes, just search for Women's Soccer Zone. And of course, online at audioboom.com/WosoZone. Thank you very much for tuning in. Thank you very much to my guests, Joe Curry, Jasmina Schweimler, Kelly Simmons, Jordan Nobbs and Kelly Smith. And we will catch up with you in a couple of weeks' time. So for now, bye-bye.